There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are a sub-science here to make things make sense.
Today we are talking about what people think about before they die and near-death experiences, and then we're going to get into information about truly how many steps are you supposed to be getting in a day. There's some updated research, as well as why people are dying younger from cancer.
Oh, whoa.
Rough.
Ernie's crying in the background.
Because he knows. I feel like this is going to be a
lot. Is that why you said rough?
Rough. I think we're going to try and keep it lighthearted because it's like it is about death, which I find so fascinating. I'm interested and I think about all the time because it's like I'm freaking Adam's family girl. But
Wednesday.
Damn it. I was like, what is their name? And I was like literally going to say Friday. And I was like, no, that's not it. And so, yeah, like it's such interesting information, but it is about death. So I don't know how everyone's going to.
Yeah, no, as always, we'll keep it light, but obviously it's serious, but it's interesting. I think like near-death experiences are fascinating.
Anyway, and there's so much more information now than ever.
I have something really weird to admit, and I don't know why I'm saving it for the pod, but I'm wearing my first pair of briefs I've ever worn.
Briefs.
Which is just like.
Wait, what? Can I see? Well, show me the band. Show me the band.
It's not going to look different.
Let me see the band.
No, it's not going to look different.
What brand?
It doesn't matter. All that matters
is... No, Mitch, you can't just say that and not tell us the information. What brand?
Well, it's embarrassing. I got it from Mark's Warehouse.
Yeah, that's fine. Mark, I'm sure, is a stand-up
guy. If you're Canadian, you know you know.
I think it's Mark's Work Warehouse.
Oh, something like that. I just had a bunch of underwear that I guess I like have from there and I liked them and I wanted to rebuy them. And then they had a version of that same underwear and briefs. And I was like, ever since I tried a Speedo, I was like, maybe I should. Briefs, by the way, I'm talking like they're not white in this case, but like the tidy whitey style.
Show me the brand.
We're literally filming.
No, the brand. Show me the brand of the band.
It's Denver Hanes.
Denver Hanes. Who's that?
It's the Mark's
Denver
house.
Hanes. Okay. Well, do you feel like a slut?
I feel weird because I realize when I wear boxer briefs, which is what I always wear.
Yeah, me too.
When they ride up, I dislike it. I'm constantly pulling them down on my legs. And what I've realized is briefs just always feel like that because the pressure point is like close to your crotch. So it feels like I'm wearing boxer briefs that are riding up all the time.
I don't like them now that I think about it. It's like when I run out of boxer briefs or...
They're my last resort.
And whenever I'm wearing them, I'm like...
It's like if I was on the beach or not wearing pants, maybe it'd be different because it'd feel like a Speedo. But
wears a Speedo once, all of a sudden he's into it.
I guess like I'm just getting used to it and thought that would be a really interesting thing to share.
No, I'm really interested. Should we go from briefs to death? Let's do it.
Oh, you want to jump right away? Wow.
Okay. I mean, there's a correlation, briefs to death.
Wait, what's the correlation?
Well, you might have a brief death. Hit it.
Okay.
Study time.
So there is a lot of information coming in about what people think about before they die. And I think about this a lot, especially when I'm in the bath. I do this like thing where I like breathe slow and pretend I'm dying. And I just think that those last thoughts are going to be so interesting. And there are actual patterns and brain research and a lot of resuscitation of people that is happening that's bringing in a lot of information. But
and some really interesting research on near-death experiences. People who, you know, maybe they had their heart stop. Maybe they had a personal experience where they thought they were dying and had these sort of like... seeing the light moments. And there's some cool neuroscience in that that we're going to talk about on top of just like what people experience emotionally as they're getting closer to death.
So we're going to start with the top five regrets that people have before they die. I think it's interesting because I think it can inform people about their life. And so this is from a palliative care nurse who's like become so famous about going around from telling this, yeah. everyone the top five regrets that they studied by interviewing a bunch of people who were dying. Most of them were in palliative care who were older. So this wasn't necessarily people dying young. This is like people who've lived long lives and what they said. The most common regret is that they didn't live a life true to themselves, but they were living a life of what others expected of them. So their biggest regret was feeling like they lived a life that others
like they weren't themselves.
Expected of them. And then I started to be like, oh, went cross-eyed and was like, whoa. Because I feel like that's a huge like existential part of everyone's life where you're like, you have desires, but you maybe put them on hold because of what you are expected to do.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like societal expectation around how you should be. And I think one thing I think about any of these kind of like regrets at late stage life is not, I think it's amazing to kind of like hear wisdom from people in different stages of life, but at different stages of life, you do care about different things. And I think it's easier, like people do get caught up in like the rat race and work, but there's an part of you that kind of has to when you're younger.
Well, the second most common regret was working too hard, working so hard and ignoring maybe people who they love, like their friends and family in order
for the expense of them.
Yeah. So the top one is doing things that are expected of you. The second most common regret was working too much. So they're kind of linked. I could imagine what is expected of you sometimes is related to work. Maybe not. I don't know. But I just think that, like, do you think that you suffer from that? Like, do you feel like you do things out of expectation?
I more have the fear that I will feel that way when I really don't want that to be a regret when I'm older.
What? The, like, which
either.
One?
But, like, that's the constant balancing act. Like, I often think about what it will feel like, assuming I live to like an old age and have had like a great life and am able to say, reflect on my life. Cause you never know what's going to happen. Knock on wood. I do have a fear of feeling like, oh my gosh, I didn't do what I wanted to do. Or there are all these things. And there are parts of my life that I feel like, oh my gosh, okay, I need a bit of a wake up call to stop getting so caught up in things that if you're looking at it here, it feels so important. But if you step back for a second, you realize it's actually not aligned with who you want to be.
Yeah, because if I think about like what this study is looking at, what people are thinking before they die, if I truly think like, okay, was I being true to myself? It's like, I feel like in the moment I am. Like, I'm like, oh, I am actually really true to myself. But I feel like with wisdom, you can look back and like, it might be hard to know what pressures you're putting on yourself that you can't even think of in the moment.
Yeah, I'm thinking like, and oh my gosh, I talk about this way too much. I obviously even been talking about it in therapy. It's like, when I'm 80, I'm probably going to be like, why did I care about Survivor so much?
Wow. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, well, there's going to be getting on Survivor because like watching it.
But or even just like anything anyone gets wrapped up in, right? Like there can be periods of your life that feel so long. Like we've been doing exam science, feels like forever. It's been 12 years. If we stop it tomorrow, we still have another potentially 60 years of life.
Where we're going to be like, remember when we did that thing?
And that's all we thought about. And we did so much energy. And like, we might feel good about that, but it will feel so, if we were to stop today, it might feel like literally a different life.
But don't you think that you sort of obsessing with getting on Survivor is you being true to yourself and your true desires? It's not like you're doing it because there's an expectation of you. To me, that thinks about like maybe family stuff or like, I don't know. I bet a lot of people maybe got into careers because their parents had expectations of them.
Yeah, you're definitely right. Like, I think that's more what that's addressing. I'm not saying the Survivor thing is an example of that, but sometimes I get so fixated on things and I know in another 10 years, I'll probably be like, it's so funny I cared about that. But I don't think that means I'll regret it. I think I'll look back and go, oh, I was actually a different person. And because through my life, I've sometimes had these goals and I'll look back to like when I was 11 or when I was 19.
What was your goal at 11? Like to like kill the spelling bee?
To be like a concert pianist. Like,
what the fuck?
Well, it's not that different from a spelling bee.
I guess not, but kind of that's what your dream was at 11?
No, it was one of them. I remember like
mine was
envisioning
to be Britney Spears' backup dancer.
No, I just like weird. I didn't have that great of like a cultural education. Most of my music touch points were classical music. I was like,
that's cultured. Are you kidding? Like
it is,
nose
but
in
I
the
was
air. Like you have a scarf and a top hat.
Only like it wasn't until late high school that I really started like listening to other music.
No, I actually can't get over your family's relationship to music. Like none of them listen to music. It's crazy. But
no,
they're
no,
all
not
musicians.
None of them do.
No, but you don't like you're all like musicians, but no, like there'll be like an adult contemporary radio station on in the background. And that's it. Like there's no like putting on this album and talking about this thing. It's like very it is like it's like either 1821. Like what was going on in 1821?
I think we all have our touch points and mine was classical. I think if you think of like my parents, my dad is all into like Pink Floyd and like that. I don't know any of it.
But then I'm like, is he? He's never talked to me about it.
Yeah, he's talked to me about it. And his like favorite album was like Jesus Christ Superstar. But he's not like overly obsessed nowadays.
Like I wish that he'd be like, guys, Jesus Christ Superstar is going on the track and we all would say.
Well, you're right. As a family, we didn't like participate together in music. It was always like because we all had individual tastes.
Yeah, ours was like dinner separate. Would have a soundtrack and we'd put on an album.
Yeah, I forget how we got here. just talking about
that your desire was to be a concert pianist.
Oh, right. All I mean is like actually sometimes now I'm like I do wish I did that, but it's also funny to be like I obviously don't. That requires like such an intense decision and lifestyle that I wasn't willing to do, and it's there was a time when I was actually trying really hard to accomplish that.
So the third most common regret was that they didn't have the courage to express their feelings. So they didn't feel like they were able to speak honestly about their feelings and that that can bring relationships to a whole new level, but it's difficult. And I was like, that one I relate to.
Yeah, me too.
Like I feel like not even in an extreme way, like I don't have much tension in my life and there's like not like any, like I feel like if there's a really obvious reason that I need to express my feelings to friends, I will. But it needs to be intense. Whereas it's like, I bet people are looking back on their life being like, why didn't I just sort of like speak openly with my loved ones all the time? But like societally and like in a room, it's like actually hard. But obviously people love it.
To love what?
Hearing honesty from people about their feelings.
Yeah, of course. Assuming that it's like well received. I would say...
I think it probably usually is. I think people are just scared because it's so vulnerable.
Yeah, this is one... I don't really have many regrets in my life right now, but one of my least favorite... Oh, you okay? Least favorite personality traits that I have is my anxiety often gets in the way of doing things that in retrospect I wish I did, especially when it comes to... death or
what?
Like serious things. I don't know. Sometimes I get in my head about like if someone had something happen to them or if someone's going through a hard time, I don't want to overimpose myself. And as a result, sometimes I am not reaching out and I wish I did in retrospect.
That's a great example.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it's scarier to reach out.
I'm
and it
afraid
is
to do the
not.
Wrong thing sometimes. And then I put it off thinking, okay, I've got to think a little more about how I want to like wait a little bit of time, give them space and then like do something nice and special. But sometimes my anxiety gets in the way thinking like, I don't want to like be annoying to somebody. Yeah. But I've looked back on instances where I was like, I definitely should have just,
this
it's
is
always
classic
nicer
vulnerability
to,
thing too. Like that's really specific, but it's also just like being vulnerable. Everyone, every therapist is like, let's be vulnerable. And it's hard. And I think that there is a balance, but I think for me, and I guess for you too, like I'm more in the potential of regretting this. Whereas there's overshares who might regret that they like opened up too much, but like that is not me. And I remember when I first started therapy and it was all about vulnerability. I like was being so vulnerable around everyone. And I actually think like, I didn't know how to do it. And it was crazy.
It was
when you were on Big Brother and I cried in public and everyone's like, there's that cry baby. And like, just
but
like,
I don't think anyone like holds that against you.
No, no. I just mean, I remember being like, I experimented with the other version and it was actually really cool. And I think I had really like, I actually, sometimes I'm like, was I more evolved then? But cause like when you start therapy, things just like hit harder. And I just remember like, yeah, like telling my friends like so many vulnerable things and like it felt really good, but I've lost that a bit because it's like you need to like truly practice it. It doesn't come naturally.
Yeah, it requires like actual effort.
And the last two, I'll just do them quickly so we can get into more of the hard science. People regretted not staying in touch with their friends and found that when they were dying, they would sometimes want to reach out to friends and wouldn't even be able to track them down. And the last one was that they regretted not allowing themselves to be happier. I was like, okay, that's interesting. Because everyone's obviously like the happiness lab and like all this stuff. And it's like, you can keep listening to all these podcasts, but that's a really simple way of putting it. Like, allowing yourself to be happy is an interesting thing that people...
I think it's so much easier when you step outside of it.
And if you're about to die.
Yeah. and or if you have a traumatic experience, you know, even when something bad happens, like say you get sick, you're like, I'm going to appreciate my health when I have it. Like, I have a lot of back problems. And when my back goes out, I'm literally like, I'm physically unable to do things now. I'm going to appreciate my wellness when I have it so much. And then that lasts for a little bit.
I'm always like, oh my God, I'm over my cold. And I like sprint, like skip through the streets and like to my barista. I'm like, $5 tip, keep the change. And I'm just like feeling so amazing. I'm like, wow, I'm a new person. Then the next day I'm like, no, it sucks. This coffee. Like, it's just like, it goes away so fast.
I think that's inevitable. And I think that's like, if you're on and knowingly on your deathbed, you're now potentially knowing your life is almost over. Of course, you're going to see life in a different way.
Yeah.
Able to appreciate, oh, I should have just not got caught up in those things, which doesn't mean it's not true, but it's obviously much easier said than done.
No, it's like something I realize I've like done, and it's almost like you've done it for me, is that you're always like, Greg, you're just always happy. Like, it's like you always like, you're just like, Greg, like, oh, you don't get it, you're always happy. And I just like at some point decided to like self-identify as happy, and sometimes I'm like, am I lying? But it's like, it works. Like,
you're
in a way, when I read
definitely
this, like,
happy.
No, but I know, but it's like regret not allowing themselves to be happier. It's like, here's a little trick, guys. Just like
pretend.
Just pretend that you're like, okay, that doesn't make any... No, I feel like people could actually turn, like, want to slap me across the face.
Yeah, I'll slap you for
that.
No.
I just mean, like, there's something about, like, because of my personality as being, like, exuberant, like, talking a lot, like, in a new situation, like, I do have a hard time not being myself. Like, mm-hmm. I actually, like, if I meet someone, like, you're kind of getting me.
Yeah, yeah. You don't put on, like, very many fronts.
It, like, sometimes in ways where you're, like, you're a little
crazy.
And you
absolutely laugh in my face when I'm, like, in a business meeting.
Oh,
like,
my God, yeah. And I'll shoot you an email after here, and we'll actually, like, I'm just like, okay, you're a Patagonia wearing, like, a tech bro. But I'll, like, rip a fart in, like, a, like, meeting with, like, someone. Like, I'm just like... I'd like to say that's not true, but like that was maybe hyperbolic. So I feel like people mistake that with a deep sense of happiness in this weird way where I've almost always been told I was happy. Like all my report cards or things would always be like his positive attitude. And it's just like, I wonder like if it's just like a self-fulfilling prophecy or not.
Probably not. It's probably because you actually were happy as a kid. Like, I mean, of course, our identities roll onto itself, right? So if you're told you're happy, and you actually have to be happy. If you're sad and you're told you're happy, it doesn't, like, make you happy.
Yeah.
But, of course, like, that has become part of your identity, to be somebody who's lighthearted and, like, changes the mood and is kind of, like... Like, it's probably more linked to your ability to need everyone to be comfortable and happy.
Yeah, which doesn't make me happy.
Exactly. But because you're the happy person, that's probably the negative side of you having a self-identity of that. Now you're managing. But I do think at the core of it, you are a happy person.
Because there is a lot of happiness lab, like, or, you know, podcast about happiness that the thesis is like, if you're striving for it, that sometimes is tough.
yeah literally it's not tough, it's literally the people who think about happiness are the least happy.
yeah that's what I mean. So like,
hello,
they're saying,
that's me.
And they're saying they regretted not allowing themselves to be happier as the fifth most common regret. I don't know, there was just something about it being like, no, I need to shut up.
I need to shut up.
I don't know what I'm saying. I'm not saying
I'm gonna have that regret, but you know, I often think back to like, there's some dark years of even Aesop Science where like my expectations of ourselves were just too high. But looking back, it's like it was all self-imposed. Like, I wasn't quote unquote allowing myself to be happy. I was judging myself so much.
Even like trips, like I'm going to New York next week I got into my master's for painting. I guess we should have said that. Like, so I'm gonna like go back to school.
Nerd alert.
Like, yeah, paint. Like, I'm so excited. That's like my passion. My degree was in biochemistry and visual art painting. Anyways, and so I'm going to New York to like look and study paint. Like, what a dream. But I give myself little bouts of anxiety because it's like, I'm going to New York alone. It's like, why are you doing? Like, when I read this, letting yourself be happy, it's like, just be excited.
Enjoy it. Yeah.
But there's something about life and like anxiety, I guess, for the New York thing, it's like, I'm going to a place alone, maybe that would scare people. But it's like, from retrospect, going to New York alone is so fun.
Yeah.
And like, but it's like sometimes you just can't help the neurophysiology of like anxiety and worry. And like, I know once I get there, I'm going to be like happy.
I think one of the most useful techniques is to imagine yourself in the future. Like I've heard this on happiness podcasts, but it's like, you know, imagine you are 70 or 80 or 90 looking back on your life. What would you want to think about this experience?
It's easier. Oh my God. It would be like,
that's so cute. Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah. Just enjoy it. You know, you're just, the stakes are not that high.
I literally just bought a like ticket to see a musical that like, I think could be bad, and I'm having so much anxiety.
It's like,
and
that's it's cool.
That's cool to watch a bad musical.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow, that's such a gay guy problem. I might go see a bad musical. It's like 2.5 hours of my life. I can't get back.
It's going to be amazing, I bet.
Okay. Let's get more into hard science.
Why don't we get into like science, biology? Greg is working on a video that is about what actually happens when you die. Not after you die, but like while you're dying. And some of my research is kind of, you know, related to near-death experiences, which is kind of similar. Like in some of those cases, you are actually physically dying and maybe come back from that.
Yeah, a lot of it is like the science of people who've been resuscitated, and it's so fascinating.
Something I learned before CPR, cardiac arrest was basically your heart stopping basically meant you would die.
Yeah.
CPR was only invented in 1959.
Okay, I literally learned that this week too. That's wild. I was like, wait, before that, when you were on the ground, people were just like, oh no.
Like if your heart stopped, it's done. But now,
everyone's just like thrusting on top of you.
Yeah, and it's like you can last even up to like 20 minutes without your heart beating. So this is the interesting thing, because then they realize your brain's actually still functioning.
Yeah.
Even when previously they would have thought you're quote unquote dead because your heart's done. Your brain's going through a bunch of things, and this is like the area in which many people experience these near-death experiences.
Also, what's cool is your brain right now is inhibited. You are likely listening to these two gorgeous voices, and that's requiring focus from your brain. You might be washing the dishes if you're trying to do a multitask with podcasts like I do. And that's also required. And then that requires focus from your brain. But when you are dying, that focus, essentially, like it requires...
Your focus is like inhibition of many other things.
Like there's all this stuff your brain's getting like sent information right now, and it's telling you to focus on these gorgeous gay voices and you're washing dishes or whatever else you're doing. When there's disinhibition, which happens when you're dying, your brain ends up firing in like really insane ways, which can lead to these epic visions, seeing light, and it sounds kind of awesome.
Well, it can be. I mean, something that's both interesting but also sad is closer to death, many patients who have Alzheimer's or like any form of dementia might suddenly have a surge for days in lucidity. Like they may start to remember things, have like remember their names, remember the people around them, have many more memories, and they think it's because there's this like brain surge happening.
Yeah.
They said sometimes it can happen 6 months, but often it's like a handful of days.
So what, like the people who are around them get hope or something?
Yeah, it can feel sad because it's like maybe they're getting better, but it's like their brain's surging in a way that's giving them access to all this sort of like memories, and then that can sometimes be a sign of the end. And they call it terminal lucidity. So it's like you have more connectedness. Their speech often comes back.
That sounds like a Dua Lipa album. Like
terminal lucidity.
Because her new album's called like Radical Optimism. It's like, oh my God, no offense, but go back to the drawing board on that one.
Radical Optimism is what it's called.
Yeah.
Who is she?
I know. No, she kind of... Wow, now I'm alienating Dua Lipa fans. I'm so...
She's interesting.
But like, she's someone who I think needs to be more true to herself and not doing what others expect of her. Like a pop concert.
Okay, whatever.
Canceled.
Okay. So moving away into another really interesting study, similar to something that's in your video. So... This was on 500 critically ill patients. I hope it's not the exact same study you had. I'm pretty sure it was different. They literally monitored their brain activity while they were undergoing CPR.
Yeah.
And they were simultaneously exposing them to audiovisual stimuli.
What? I don't have that. That should be in the video.
You can always add it.
Like, well, it's filmed.
No, you can do a voiceover animation kind of.
By the way. Yeah.
So... Later, they then tested their memory to see if they had any sort of like awareness during these moments.
Yeah.
When they were seemingly unconscious.
Yeah.
Getting CPR, their hearts weren't working. So they said within 20 seconds of cardiac arrest, their brains flatlined, but usually within 5 minutes, could be longer, they saw a reemergence of brain activity.
Whoa.
This is a quote from one of the authors. He said, when you die, your brain is deprived of oxygen and nutrients, so it shuts down. This shutting down process takes away the brakes, and suddenly what seems to be happening is it gives you access to parts of your brain that you normally can't access. All your thoughts and memories or your interactions with everyone else come out. And it said one in five survivors reported lucid experiences that occurred after their heart stopped. So they could recall some of the audiovisual stimuli stuff that was real. Whoa. They weren't hallucinating. It wasn't like they were making things up. They were able to track and have it verified that they
were kind conscious of, in a way. I think that is kind of similar. It's funny because all of them say one out of five. It's like, that's the one out of five. But some of them, not the one out of five who were able to recall it, would have their brains scanned when they were dying and their brains were like going absolutely slay all over the place, and then when they like came back, they're like, do you remember anything? And they were just like, no. And they're like, but well, okay, well,
like your brain,
but in
was.
The moment, like, you were,
yeah,
but like something was happening. So like, it's just also only certain people when they come back are able to recall. That doesn't mean that they didn't go through something that they just can't remember.
But obviously you hear a lot of anecdotal stories from people having near-death experiences. Some say like your whole life flashes before your eyes. Some say you see the light.
The see the light thing is because they actually found in rats and in humans that your visual cortex will light up for the same reason. The disinhibition of
the brain. A bunch of firings going on.
Yeah, so the seeing the light thing makes sense. And then all the other stuff, that's like your brain fires in ways that like they're obviously they can look at your brain and be like, that's part of your brain that's involved with memory. But it's more the interviewing them after where they get a lot of information, because it's like, you can look at someone's brain, but you can't know exactly how it's going to manifest as like an experience. But people are like, it felt more clear than a dream, more clear than a hallucination. They felt like they were going home. They accessed childhood memories they never like could have accessed before. Like, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, obviously this is just, I was reading people's stories. So this is obviously not based on research, but online, something I found interesting and also kind of creepy was a lot of people describe like, you know, such a peaceful, like coming to terms with and feeling good about whether they're seeing the light, whether they're seeing
knowing you're dying.
Memories. Like, there was literally a TikTok of a guy who was like had some condition where he actually was considered dead for a bit and came back. And then he said it was so peaceful that it was really hard to come back to life.
Yeah.
Like, once he was back, he could only think about like that peacefulness.
Whoa.
And serenity. And a lot of people online say who've had this experience say that can be a huge challenge. And some people are just like come to terms with it, and they're like, it's made their lives easier because they know they're in transit to get back to that.
Oh my god, I kind of want someone to like strike me with their car just enough where I can
don't
do that.
Okay,
knock on wood. I guess you're right. That's an insane thing to say. But you know what I mean?
I mean, like, it'd be interesting to have that experience with like not the risk of actually just dying.
Some people do like the whole like high amounts of like psychedelic drugs to try and get themselves there, but then this recent study that the video's about, a lot of them were like, sorry huns, it's a lot different than a trip. Like all the ones who had done like even high amounts of DMT or high amounts of shrooms were like, it's not the same. Whereas I think people are trying to access that
your body dying is not the same as your body being on a drug.
But a lot of mushrooms and their research is that it's doing similar things. It's making your brain less inhibited. So it causes the brain to fire in these ways where it's not like quote unquote normal, which gives you the trip, which gives you, and there is a lot of like acceptance of death through those high amounts of psychedelic drugs. I think people doing it a lot of the times are trying it to do it in an existential way to cope
to change
with
their
death.
Way they perceive life
and
their relationship to death.
I think a lot, and that's what I mean is that I think a lot of them go like, I did it. And it's like these people who have like come back from CPR are like, I'm sorry, hon, those shrooms are weak, bro.
I mean, here's my soapbox. You know, life implies death as, you know, in implies out, up implies down, black implies white, something implies nothing. So like, without death, you actually, life can't exist, which is
okay. Guru, you got your new job, starting a commune. Okay. One thing that I like hadn't included in my video, but I thought was interesting, was that loved ones of dying people are really asking for healthcare professionals to be more clear about death. So essentially, the video that I made was about right before you die. It's called active dying. So like the first thing that goes is taste, or sorry, you become less hungry, less thirsty. You start to go unconscious and like have crazy dreams and see the light, and like you make a weird death rattle because you're breathing, but your body no longer like can really sense the saliva, and you make these crazy noises that freaks the family out. But really it's just a sign that you're like so chilling and relaxed. So it's kind of being like, there is a process to dying that doctors know about, but I think they don't have, obviously a lot of doctors would, but like this study found a lot of patients would like, were like, could you please just take me through this process and actually talk to me about it in front of my loved one who's dying. So a lot of the time they'll like they'll kind of pull you to a side room and they've realized like, wait, I want us all to be
honest about what's happening.
I was like, that's kind of interesting. Because I feel like a lot of like family can be there and not know what to talk about. And it's that a lot of the patients who are dying, they want to talk about meaning. Like they want to think about autonomy and guilt and these things. And their loved ones addressing the fact that they're dying could help with that. And then I was reading this thing about like spiritual. Do you know what the difference between spirituality and existentialism is?
No.
So I didn't really know this either, but it's like spirituality by definition is when you have a sense of peace and purpose and connection and meaning in life and death. Whereas existentialism,
is that it's only in life?
No, it's just a concern related to existence.
Okay.
But obviously they're linked, and sometimes people will use them interchangeably.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought they're the same thing.
But like, yeah, but I think like, maybe spirituality, a lot of the time you can be thinking about death. Spirituality is about being at peace with it.
Yeah, to me,
existentialism is about thinking about it.
Totally. To me, spirituality is sort of the antidote to existentialism.
Yeah, I know. I kind of
because we have no better tool, I think.
And I think when people are dying, those two words become really important. Spirituality versus existentialism. And they found that existential concerns, like they relate, and I never even thought about this, existence, it's in the word. I didn't ever think about that. So it's like the climate crisis is considered an existential threat because it's a threat to the existence of humans.
Yeah.
I always was just like, it's an existential threat. Like I just like said it. Existence it's like, oh no, threat. It's like, it's defined as that because humans could no longer exist. Doesn't mean that trees won't. And like, it's an existential threat to humans. I was like, that's so clarifying to me. And then they found that people who have a higher sense of psycho-spiritual well-being are obviously, not obviously, but I thought obviously, more able to cope with terminal illness and find meaning in the experience of dying. Whereas like the existential dimension, it is more linked to people facing like suffering and loss and death as they're dying. And that they do kind of like, again, want to talk about life events and like meaning, and a lot of the suffering before death is because they're feeling like they're a burden to people around them. They're losing their dignity. They feel hopeless. And so they're just kind of being like, it is important to talk about these things, but it's probably so scary.
Yeah.
And people would probably rather just be like, oh, you're eating food. That's good. It's like, no, they want to be like, let's go ham on these deeper conversations. And I get why it's like, bring in the priest or whatever. It's like spirituality becomes really important to try and become peace with
that. It's a really... It will be very interesting to reach that point.
I know.
And have that experience and know that it's happening. And because obviously, like, as many people, like, I'm not like so afraid of dying, but I am so afraid of dying in terms of like, I don't know, it's existential.
Yeah.
Like, literally, it's like, this is all I can consciously comprehend, so what is there after? And that's actually like quite scary.
The one thing that the video is nice about is that for a lot of people, this extreme relaxation is like very
like knowing there's like a physiological or neurological relaxation is at least, you know, it's nice to know that you're going to be put into probably a mental place of being calm.
And you know, when like they use examples of like if you have extreme flu or extreme colds and you're just like lying in bed and can't move, it's kind of like that, but sleep is no longer rejuvenating when you're dying. And I like, sometimes I get like my crazy migraines and I'm like, oh, I just can't wait to die. Like I just think like I'm not like, if you're really sick or you're really fatigued, like there is a really cool like incapability of anxiety towards death.
That's like, true. When you're exhausted, you're just like,
I'm literally lying there with a migraine. I'm like, when I die, at least I don't have to feel this. And it like brings me comfort because I'm like, yeah, like a world where I don't get migraines and vomit and shit myself.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Like if you're so exhausted, it's just like you're ready. When you're ready, you're ready.
Yeah, yeah. So there's something that like majority of people in the Western world are going to die in that context, like a slow, gradual, active death in a hospital with dying aids, with pain medication, and with like an extreme fatigue and unconsciousness that makes you dip in and out of these sort of like realms of probably very spiritual experiences actually as you're dying.
Man, it's so crazy to think about. I don't know why. You know, every now and then your brain just like hits on, wow, death is real.
Yeah, that is, I mean, that's
it's like a fleeting emotion that hits sometimes.
Yeah. And you're
like,
oh God. And if it hits you when you got an edible, oh my God, I'm running in circles trying to not think about it. That's when I put on Just Dance and I'm like, oh, baby, come on, baby. And I'm just like dancing in my basement, like purple lipped so high, being like, don't think about death. Don't think about death. But that's at the same time, I think it can, I also go there in order to relieve anxiety if I'm ever having it. Like, and like, if, for example, I'm being anxious about going to see a bad musical, hashtag gay guy privilege, my only issue.
Like, you use what? Distraction?
I'm like, well, no, I'm like, I'm going to die one day. Oh, enjoy your bad musical.
Yeah. It can be a tool to just like appreciate what you have.
It's a tool to not fret the small stuff because you're like, okay, if I'm dying, I'm not going to care about this. But I only ever go there when I'm really anxious, which isn't that much. It's like if I have like an exam or something.
Yeah.
Which I haven't had in, I don't know, over a decade. Would you have any more info?
No, I had like one other study, but you kind of touched on it already. It was I think it's the same as yours. It was just like on people as they actually died, watching their brains and seeing like similar to rats, because there's been a lot of studies on rats that show their brains burst on EEGs, like in a specific region.
In focused ways for the rats, like in ways... When the rats were alive and focused is what their brain becomes as they die, which is so interesting.
What they were focused on, you mean?
Or it's like a really active, hyper-focused brain they see happens in rats dying of cardiac arrest.
This was just saying, like, so these were people who were on life support and their brains were being monitored when they were taken off it. And it was like tons of gamma waves like started like syncing up and shooting out. They've known that about rats, and then they were like, this is the first example of us measuring it in humans.
Cool.
It was only on a group of four people, of which I think only two exhibited this behavior. So they're like, we obviously need to
To my video.
And they said those gamma waves are associated with conscious perceptions, lucid dreams, and hallucinations. So like they can't be sure because those people then pass, they never get to ask them. But those kinds of brainwaves track with those kinds of experiences. So whether or not they were like seeing things or having those kind of experiences is interesting.
It's cool that like people who come back say it's different than a dream. Because I always am just like picturing a dream. But then I'm like, no, I hope it's more than a dream. Because every time I wake up in the morning from a dream, I'm like, wasn't that
cool? But some dreams can feel really real. But I assume
they feel real, but they're not like that interesting to me. Maybe it's because like my dreams aren't that interesting.
Maybe.
I only ever remember when I'm at like a theme park and I'm like so excited because it's like, this is so fun. But then I never end up going on the ride. I'm always about to go on the ride. And I never actually experience the ride. So I'm like, dreams suck.
Yeah,
like,
that's the worst part about dreams.
They're so anticipatory.
Like, yeah.
It's like take me on the ride. That's so fun. I don't have to actually wait in line at Disney. I could just go on rides in my head over and over. But like, I never do. I'm always going. I've literally gone up the roller coaster.
Just to stop?
And then just like, I don't know. I guess then I start dreaming about like Real Housewives or something else. Like, I just like snap to a new like non-fun place.
When you have it, like those are the dreams that you're like, when it actually lets you do the good part. Like,
have you ever done that? Yeah, I guess sex dreams. Sometimes I'm like, that was fun.
Sex dreams are the same where it's like often it's like leading up to it and you never actually get to experience
it. But know what? That's so hot. Cause like, I think a lot with sex, unlike a roller coaster, the anticipation can be really fun. Actually, is the fun part about going at a roller coaster like the anticipation? Is it that you're in line? No, it's not that you're in line.
It's not the line, but it could be like the going up.
Yeah.
Is a part of how fun it is.
Whereas I feel like with sex, it's more like fun. Anticipation is more fun than a roller coaster. What's more fun?
They're both fun.
Anticipation of sex or going up at like a drop zone in like...
Which would I rather in my dream?
Yeah.
anticipation of sex.
Okay, well, we got a horn dog on our hands.
But no, I mean, even dreams where I'm like, I have magic powers, it's like only when I like just start to use them, I always wake up.
You have dreams where you get magic powers like for Harry Potter?
Yeah, 100%.
You have, my dreams are always so in reality. It's so stupid.
Oh no, I like, especially, and then this doesn't happen often, but especially having a lucid dream where you can be like, I actually know I'm dreaming and can control this, but I almost always wake up.
We're so dumb for not following our own lucid dream ASAP science video about every morning writing your dreams and then you slowly can lucid dream. Because I did it for like a month and then I actually like lucid dream twice. And then I was like, okay, I'm done. It's like, no, that's amazing.
It is, but I have a hard time believing that people like can do it so on command. But maybe they can.
What? You definitely believed when we made the video.
I do believe it, but I feel that I tried it. Well, I didn't try that hard, but I know I've had lucid dreams. I am curious. I mean, it would be really fun to have lucid dreams, actually.
Think about it. Imagine shutting your eyes at night and being like, let's go. And like being like confident.
Should we do an episode on lucid dreaming?
Yeah, I'll add it.
And okay, then if you have any experiences with lucid dreaming, you should send it to us. And if you do it and successfully are able, like have created a structure in which you journal and those things have actually helped. Because I feel like I started to do it and I was just like, this isn't working. And I just feel like, what's the point? Am I just tricking myself? But I'm curious if people have genuine experiences with being able to control their lucid dreams.
ASAPScience.com/chat if you can lucid dream. No lying, my friends. And we'll be able to tell.
Yeah. And don't just like tell us your dreams.
That is actually maybe the worst nightmare for a podcast call-in show. Someone being like, so I'm going to tell you my dream.
Yeah,
actually,
no. We don't really want to hear your dreams, no. But I want to know about your experiences with lucid. Well, because that's part of the reason that I'm like, even if you can choose to lucid dream outside of like, I don't know. Some people are like, then you can like practice things in your sleep. But it's like, can you?
That is some type A crazy shit. Imagine I went to sleep and then imagine like you went to sleep and like wrote a gorgeous piano song, woke up and then it didn't exist. That would suck.
Yeah.
You'd be like, I just,
but maybe you
really
could like
hard.
Practice Spanish.
Imagine you started lucid dreaming and like went to work and like ended up having like a full day. And then you'd wake up and be like, oh, nothing
it's
added
severance.
To my bank account. Yeah. Also that show overrated. Alienating them.
Okay.
Before we get into our What Have We Learned this week, we did get a message on Spotify from someone being like, I'm British, my friend's Australian, we still love you, Greg, don't worry.
On Spotify?
On Spotify, you can write comments.
I don't get that. I still don't know where to see them and where to even...
It goes to my personal email. You have zero access. You have zero access. I can show you one if you want.
That's so weird. I've never seen these.
But it was people saying that they're okay with the fact that I ripped them so hard. And they had one other example, too.
Well, these are the people who have stuck around.
Yeah, that's
you don't know how many have left and won't ever comment.
Yeah, you're right.
But thank you to those who have stuck around.
Thank you to those people stuck around even though I'm ripping Britain, Australia, people who like Dua Lipa. It's like, okay, well, it's like a third of the world.
All right, shall we take a break and then come back for some more science?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
How many steps do you think you need to balance a sedentary life?
Isn't it 10,000?
That's the common number that gets thrown out.
Wait,
there.
Is that the one from like Fitbit?
Yeah, I kind of forget now where that number came from. But so like in a previous video, I actually explained, sorry, a pretty previous podcast on posture, I had a study that showed like a single workout session doesn't necessarily offset sitting all day.
Yeah.
This new study was This new study was looking at how many steps are required to offset a sedentary lifestyle.
Like, meaning like sitting all day?
Yeah, because so many people sit like all the time for work and then home, you're on your phone, you're watching TV, blah, blah, blah. And that sedentary lifestyle is linked to cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, shorter lifespan overall. And so this study used 72,000 people that they've been tracking. The study's going to continue for like another 30 years or something like that.
Whoa.
The median time of sedentary like life. So how do I say this? Like people... How do you say not on average, but the median of sedentary lifestyle is 10.6 hours every day.
Whoa.
That's how much people are not moving.
Wait, like, are we, I say that doesn't include sleep. But then I'm like.
No, we probably are not that far off from that. Thinking of how much we sit for work and then sit at night. Because
you're just like always sitting.
And so they obviously found the more steps you took, regardless of your sedentary level, the lower your risk of cardiovascular disease and early death.
Yeah, okay, obviously.
Now, this number, it was between 9,000 and 10,000 daily steps were optimal to counteract a highly sedentary life, which to me is
so
kind of ironic.
Fitbit was right.
Yeah, but to me it's like, well, then that's not a sedentary life. But I guess like that's the point.
No, 10,000 steps is not that many. Like you could have a sedentary life and still do that.
I think... it actually is quite a lot. So I like look at my steps all the time. I think I obviously do hit 10,000 lots of times, but there's many days when I only get 5 or 6.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Like you have to like kind of put an effort in today's world, unless you're somebody who has a job that's on your feet. That's totally different.
Oh, like teachers. When I was a teacher, I got so many steps.
And to be fair, I don't have my phone in my pocket unless I'm like going on a walk. So maybe I'm getting more steps than I'm actually counting. But they found that by getting 9,000 to 10,000, it lowered cardiovascular risk by 21% and mortality risk by 39%.
Okay.
50% of the benefits came after just 4,000 or 5,000 steps though. So it's like, it is in proportion to how much you walk or move.
I guess 10,000 is a lot. I'm only ever counting my steps when I'm like traveling and I'm like, I got 30,000.
Yeah, that's like, very different. But I bet on a daily basis, like I'm not commenting on you, but even for myself, like I notice... I like walk to the office every day and walk home every day, and that's only going to be like...
That's not 10,000?
No, that's maybe 4,000 or 5,000.
Rough.
Yeah. So
a dog goes rough.
If you're trying to get 10,000, I don't think it's hard, but I think in a regular day, it's like you have to put in the effort.
Whoa, I'm going to like walk somewhere now.
Yeah, I think the study kind of thought like it's an important public health message just to know that any amount is good. They kind of said anything over 2,000, like you... that's what you want. Like that's kind of like the baseline. Try and push over that and it will lower your risk of cardiovascular disease and all those other things. But ultimately, if you're wanting to like really offset a sedentary lifestyle, try and hit those 10,000 steps. Wow, this is just one marker, of course.
It's so smart to like walk home from the restaurant or whatever. Mm-hmm. Hot take.
Yeah, when we do stuff like that, like it's easy to get 10,000, but just the amount of days we also like don't leave the house.
I'm thinking about today. I'm like, all I've done is like actually sit, and then I drove here and I'm like actually scared, and my heart's not beating right. Oh my god, I'm gonna like walk in circles. I walked up these steps to piss.
Yeah, well,
what about running? Does like, because I run again, it's like, does that count more?
I don't think it necessarily counts more,
because you know what I mean, like you're, it's harder than it's walking. Good, it's but good. It's shorter than walking.
Yeah, but I think like increasing your heart rate is healthy, obviously. So like there's different benefits, but these kind of studies are often like trying to help people who aren't in the first place doing activities. Yeah. So like I think, yes, running's great. Walking is also so good.
I just don't like have a walking culture. Like
I have such, you a, have walking such a walking culture. Culture.
I bike or run because I'm like scared of being slow.
I'd say walking, like, does that count? Is one of my well, of course it counts. Biking and running, that counts.
No, but I mean like it's always for shorter times that then I'm sitting longer, because it's like walking takes longer, and then it's like I just need to walk more.
Just well, I'm not saying you're doing the wrong things. I'm saying this is, we're not comparing it to running or biking. We're comparing it to doing nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Slay.
So running and biking are good things.
Cause you're so walk culture.
I'm so walk culture. Like I would say walking is probably one of my favorite things in the whole world. It's not that I can like walk what? Forever. I don't like,
do you mean walking is number one?
I just love just to like stroll. I don't even need to be walking fast. Like, to walk, I've just realized is like such a mental health clarity thing for me.
Oh yeah, like
to move
when everyone was like going on my COVID mental health walk.
Yeah, but that's for real, and that's still and you. Even for my back, I noticed if I'm not getting a walk in every day, my back's way more likely to be precarious.
Interesting. And then I also even found during COVID I would bike, not walk.
But that's, I'm not saying walking's better than biking. You
no,
keep bringing
I'm
that up.
Saying that I have a problem with speed.
Yeah, you
and
have
I'm
an
obsessed
addiction.
With fast things. That even then, it's like if I'm going to do a mental health thing, I have to be zooming on a bike past everything so fast that nothing is real. Okay, anyways, I was just bringing up my own issues. Okay, my what do we learn this week is kind of back to death, and it's that. Okay, I don't want to scare people. Overall, cancer is decreasing worldwide due to better screening, like
catching early and stuff?
That's like the main reason.
Okay.
But early onset cancers, that's people getting cancer below the age of 50, is on the rise.
Oh.
And Chadwick Boseman, who died of colon cancer, is like a person who they're using as public awareness because he's someone who fits into the category of what they're trying to figure out why this is happening.
As in like seemingly young, healthy, like no other reason to think that he would have.
Obviously that happens sometimes, but it's on the rise that they use him as like an example because they're trying to talk to physicians more to be like something's
keep an
happening.
Eye out for,
And obviously these early onset cancers being below the age of 50 is still such a fraction of all cancers that they're easy to ignore because most cancer obviously is happening after 50. It's related to aging, et cetera. But they're kind of like now being like, I think we need to try and figure this out. Mm-hmm. It's mostly breast, lung, and colon cancer. The first thing to think about is genetic clues. So people who are at a higher risk of like specific cancers like colon cancer, they're like, maybe the screening needs to be bumped earlier from like 50 is maybe when you get a colonoscopy to 40.
Okay.
So it's sort of like telling, like if you're out there and you like go to the doctor and they're like, oh, your mom had colon cancer, your grandma had colon cancer. Like you might be like, okay,
start screening early.
Look at this Nature article that ASAP Science taught me about. Like, could I get a colonoscopy because I'm 40, not 50? And they might be like, huh? Mm. Like the point is that they're going to conferences and trying to tell people like, maybe you can do 40 on that person.
Okay.
There might be GI issues related to colon cancer. So if you have IBS or Crohn's disease, it's like smart to just like, again, there's a little bit of a connection they're finding to just go to your doctor and be like, could I get tested a little earlier? Mm-hmm. And they think it might be related to the microbiome and antibiotics, like if you're taking antibiotics, but also they really were like, it actually probably relates to what you were fed as a kid.
I hate that.
Oh, yeah.
Because, well, I'm like, it's just, I hate when they're like, and it's the thing that's now fully out of your control that would define the rest
exactly.
of your life.
Their thing was like, also people are like, I don't know what I ate as a kid. Like, I know they're like, people can't even remember what they ate yesterday. That they're like, it's kind of unfair to start.
But like, I know I ate Pogos and a Hot Pockets and like just, and like sugar
and didn't we
cereal.
Like actually study your microbiome? And it was like.
It was not good, but that was you can change it.
Yeah, I honestly think that you probably have, but it was like it was interesting that they. Okay,
I want to do that again because I feel like I'm much healthier now.
Yeah, but we eat kimchi like all the time. Like our house always smells like kimchi, and like no, I think it probably is healthier now. But it is rough that it's like they truly were like processed foods as a kid. Okay,
that's like all I ate.
Didn't only eat processed foods.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. You're just remembering them because they were the most inciting times because you had Pogos for breakfast.
Oh my gosh.
And then the last thing was what the mother consumed during pregnancy could be a relation.
I mean,
as well.
Also, it's just like sucks when you're like out of your. I'm not saying I don't even know what.
No,
my
but
mom
a
would
lot
eat,
of these things are out of control. It's actually about talking to your doctor about if any of those things relate to you, asking for early screening.
When I'm 90 and they ask me what's your biggest regret, it's going to be eating Pogos at 6 years old.
But that's so, oh my God. But if you made it to 90, then that's fine. It means the colon
true.
Cancer.
True, okay. Well, at 60 when I'm on my deathbed.
No. I mean, if you are out there, like, just don't give your kids Pogos for breakfast. But who knows? Maybe we'll find out that the batter in the Pogo was incredible
something,
for your microbiome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not true. Please don't name that. But you're right. Like, you can change your microbiome. I would be interested. I have to take way more antibiotics than you because I get strep all the time. So, like, But I was surprised because I still was getting strep all the time when we did that video. But so my was microbiome
I.
was so
I used high. To get strep all the time too, but now I don't.
Huh. But I am curious. It's like how much of the microbiome stuff relates to your childhood, which they talk about a lot, versus, yeah, like dummying garlic and onions like all day for your microbiome now. Like how much is it helping?
Yeah.
The diversity. Anyways.
I don't know.
You seem sad about it. Are you thinking about POCOS or something?
Well, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I'm feeling weird.
Wait, why? It's okay that you ate POCOS. You are obviously overestimating how much processed food you ate.
No, I don't think I am. But no, I'm not actually like sad about that. I'm more just like, death's got coming to my door.
It's, oh my God, man, just not. Okay, well, knock on wood.
We've done that a lot this episode.
I know. I've knocked on wood. I actually knocked on wood twice earlier this morning.
Well.
Is that... Should we do an episode on knocking on wood?
Does it work?
I used to throw salt over my shoulder, too.
No.
Yeah. As
that's
a kid.
Like and my parents weird, were like medieval
what
one.
Is it? What is it again? It's like, why did I even do that? You like throw it over your shoulder when the...
I don't know, Greg. That is so weird.
Is it when you spill salt?
What?
It's when you... Spill the salt.
You throw it, over,
throw it over your shoulder so you don't get bad luck. I used to like do it. My parents would be like, Craig, stop.
I don't
salt
think that's it. When you spill salt?
I'm pretty sure.
Or do you
sure
just take it and throw it over your shoulder?
I was such a superstitious.
But it was like a witch thing or like a hex. Like you're yeah breaking a bad.
Well, growing hex up gay, I'm like, I think I might be a witch. Like things are starting to add up to witch vibes. So I'm just going to make sure that I don't curse my family. But I really did enjoy it. I always felt like it made me feel like spiritual and like I was a part of something more.
I don't really have
superstitions like that.
Well, I love the idea of superstitions, but I'm trying to think of like anything that I actually
I knock practice on wood because I did it twice this morning alone.
You did it alone? Yes. Yeah. I don't. I only do it like I do it like performatively
I
around
actually
other
wrote,
people.
I
knock like, on wood.
I wrote knock on wood in a text to someone and then knocked on wood just in case. Well, because knocking on wood's so easy. I'm like, I might as well. Throwing salt over each other is a little bit more like, okay,
definitely
now
never
pick
done
up
that
the salt.
Yeah.
You aren't that superstitious. No, you're not.
But like,
but
I'll
you still
see,
believe in
I
like,
think I maybe create some of my own superstitions around like, I don't know, what? Behaviors. It's not like I think they're magic, but I might, it's more like neurotic around the way I might do something.
But not like a classic one.
It's not like I haven't, yeah, I don't
you
have.
You step on cracks all day.
Oh, I actually often skip cracks.
Okay.
But Mitch, not because I think so I'll break my mother's back, but
oh,
it's more like visually when I'm walking, I'm trying to get two steps in every sidewalk block. You go like one, two, one, two, and you're always stepping on the crack, you know? And then
is this why you're like walking so much? Because it's just like a little like equation little in your
yeah
head.
But to me, it's not a superstition. I'm not doing it because I think I'll like die. If I do it, it's more like a little puzzle.
Yeah.
Like it's fun to not step on cracks. And sometimes when I'm walking on bricks, I'll like switch the angle of my feet to like walk on the bricks. But I think lots of people do that.
Yeah. I think I sometimes get spiritual. No, that's not the right word. Superstitious around like flying.
So what do you do?
I don't really do anything. I just like kind of start thinking.
Write down superstition as an episode.
And I start like thinking about it. And then I'll sometimes be like, hey, God, what's up? It's Greg here. Been a while. I know that you're probably progressing like the rest of us. So like being gay is fine, right?
I'm allowed to talk to you now.
Like, hey, how y'all doing?
Oh, God. Did you know for all the fellow Drag Race friends, Greg didn't know what charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent stood for?
I didn't realize it was an acronym. I thought it was four adjectives that represent what one does on the show.
Yeah.
And it is an acronym for a
together
dirty word. Well, someone
which apparently
else,
Gen Z are like, there's a lot of jokes about like Gen Z saying it at like family gatherings and being like, that's like, we're allowed to say that word. It's like a fun word. But I still can't say it.
It's a fun word in the UK and it's a bad word here.
Yeah.
Because then kids said it to me in the UK. They called me called me a cunt and I like lost my mind. They're like, no, it's just like saying, hey, that bruv. And I was like, are you serious?
No.
And then like, no, I'm serious. And the teachers were like, that's not a big deal.
Huh.
And that's when I said I was pissed, which meant angry, which I guess was still a little bit bad. And they were like, that's so bad here. And I had like a talking to from the principal. So it's like there is, you know, I guess it's an American show. So it is a bad word.
What's an American show?
Drag Race.
Oh, sorry. I lost track of where we're at. Yeah. That's it, I think.
Yeah. Next episode, we're not sure what it's going to be about,
but
we have a lot in the pipeline from earlier. We've gotten people coming in with really great ideas.
Yeah. And we've gotten some of your voice notes that are not necessarily related to a specific episode. So I'm sure at some point we'll do a comment corner to address like some What?
No one's really chimed in saying they want to be in a throuple with us.
Yeah. Well, that was only like a day ago that came
Yeah,
out.
But I still thought, like, you know, after one day of asking people to go to asapscience.com/chat and ask me in a throuple with us, I thought there'd at least be like 3 or 4, 0 actual birds chirping, crickets chirping, nothing.
I guess that's our answer.
Yeah.
Monogamy is our for
yeah,
us.
No one wants to be in throuple with us. I honestly was like, oh, we shouldn't have asked because the freaking phone lines are going to be clogged. And then it's just like, oh, there's this news note, and it's just like, I have an idea for a video. I'm like, cool, cool. That's actually a really great idea for a video, but you didn't ask to date us.
We'll see. We'll see what happens.
One person said they loved couple to throuple.
Oh, cute.
And they were like, Becca's a slay or something. And I was like, I don't know who that is. Like, I clearly am not watching this very well.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week or hear you or talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing, so we made ByHeart. A better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.